Listening to that inner voice, it's about if there's a knowing within you that you came here to do something, and no matter who it is or what it is that keeps you from doing it, you tell yourself, this is something I intend to manifest. That's the difference between people who rise to the levels I'm speaking about and those who live at ordinary levels of awareness. Those who live at inspired levels put their attention on what they intend to manifest. They don't get themselves concerned with the details and how it's going to work out. As Einstein put it, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And that's literally a metaphysical, and it's a quantum truth, that if you shift how you observe the world becomes something different than it is. I don't look at the world as an evil place. I think for every act of evil, there's a million acts of kindness, and you can see it happening in the country right now. You can see it. We're coming together. We're going to make this planet into a place in which, and this is my goal for you for this afternoon, is to remove the filter between yourself and God. You've just filtered it out. And that filtering system is one in which you can cleanse it, and not only cleanse it, but you can just toss it out so that you just move yourself back into spirit in every thought that you have, and then the knowings become, they become so powerful that everything around you shifts in the presence. Joel Goldsmith said it this way: in the presence of the God realized, the laws of the material world do not apply. It's true. In the presence of the God realized, the laws of the material world do not apply. Cause and effect have no basis whatsoever. A knowing, when you have, one of my favorite quotes, I jotted it down this morning to bring in, it's from Kostantzakis, Nikos Kostantzakis, who wrote Zorba. By believing passionately in something that still does not exist, you create it. The non-existent is whatever you have not sufficiently desired. By believing passionately in a relationship that you want to have work, by believing passionately in the abundance to come into your life, by believing passionately that the job that you're seeking is going to matter, whatever it might be, by banishing doubt so firmly that you become a part of God consciousness, there's no doubt in God, in that from which all things come. There's no doubt there. All of your doubts, you know, Shakespeare said, our doubts are what? Our traitors. Our traitors. So here's what Patanjali said. When you're inspired by some great purpose, some extraordinary project, okay? Six things, and I'm going to talk about each of these separately. All of your thoughts break their bonds. Your mind transcends limitations. Your consciousness expands in every direction. And you find yourself in a new and a great and a wonderful world. Dormant forces, that is, forces that you thought were dead, dormant forces, faculties, and talents come alive, and you discover yourself to be a greater person by far than you ever dreamed yourself to be. That's what you get for being inspired. So let's take the first one. When you're inspired by some great purpose, some extraordinary project, that just means you're on purpose in life, listening to the music within you and refusing to allow anything else to play, no matter what comes before you. When you're inspired, all of your thoughts break their bonds. So what does it mean to live a life in which your thoughts have no boundaries, no bonds? What it means is this. Let's say that there's a ladder up here on the stage, and the ladder has 10 rungs from the bottom to number 10 as the top. And 10 represents the highest desire, the highest spiritual consciousness. It represents God realization, all right? So these over here to my left, over here are called your desires. These are your desires, what you want to attract into your life, up to 10, okay? So if you put out into the world your desire, even though it doesn't exist yet, but you passionately believe in it, your desire is, let's say, well-being, health. Your desire is to attract the right person into your life. Your desire is to be addiction-free. Your desire is to have prosperity as a way of life. Your desire is to be peaceful. Your desire is whatever it is, okay? It's a 10. It's God consciousness. It conflicts with no one. It excludes no one. It's about beauty. It's about kindness. It's about joy. It's about peace, all right? So that's your desire. Now you keep that up and keep that in mind now for the rest of the afternoon. This is a number 10. Now you have to ask yourself, what have I trained myself to believe? And what I've trained myself to believe about my number 10 is usually a 2 or a 3. So I'm sitting next to a woman on an airplane, and I said to her, we start talking, and I said, what do you do? What do you do? And she said, I'm a photographer. I said, oh. I said, what kind of photographs? She said, well, I do mostly weddings and things like that. And she was flying back from Maui to Los Angeles after having photographed a wedding. I said, oh, I said, well, how does it work? How does it feel? She said, well, I'm never going to get rich at it. Now, that doesn't sound like much to you, but when you're working at God consciousness, this really sucks, to paraphrase my children's language, huh? So that here you have, I said, would you like to be rich? Why, of course, who wouldn't? I said, so your desire is to have prosperity, but what you offer up to it is, I'll never get it, okay? So what we want to do is make a shift here. So that every thought that we have and every action that we have is inspiring, is in spirit, okay? So that there's a wonderful book. I've written the foreword to only two books in my whole life, right? I turn all of that stuff down. But this one I couldn't because it was, I don't know, I'm 65 and I was asked to write it by some dead people. And you just don't say no to dead people when you're 65. You know, you could be taking a chance. Actually, it's called Ask and It Is Given, The Teachings of Abraham. How many know who Abraham is? Oh, many of you do. I'm surprised. But that's becoming much more popular. Well, Abraham is a collection of beings, if you will, who channel through a woman named Esther Hicks. And they travel around the country and they give talks. And I think they have the most profound teachings available to us on the planet today. That's my opinion. I've been listening to Abraham for 20 years, and I've never heard of them slip once. I know there's nothing phony about it. I am deeply, deeply touched by their great wisdom. And Abraham, who is said that there's a person here whose teachings reflect closest to us what we are trying to teach to you. His name is Wayne Dyer. Ask if he will write the foreword to your book. What am I going to say? No, I'm not going to do that. But anyway, the people who have read this book, anybody in the room read Ask and It Is Given? What's your reaction?
My life turned around.
Your life turned around? Completely?
Lack to abundance.
From lack to abundance? Wonderful. And so are you. You're so beautiful. Thank you. Anyone else? Ask and it is given. Who's read it? Anyone else? Any other thoughts? Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the desires have to match up with your vibration. It's all about energy, yeah. Who'd like to read it? Stand up, right there. What's your name? What is it? Can you catch this?
Yes, I can.
All right. There you go. God bless you. Enjoy it. That's close enough. God bless you. Ask and it is given. I brought three or four cases. Take it home. It's cheap. It's powerful. It's life-changing. It explains what I'm trying to talk about here. When you are inspired by some great purpose, some extraordinary project, all of your thoughts break their bonds. So this is what you want to do. You want to have level 10 desires, and that's a frequency. That's a vibration. Everything, as Einstein said, hey, I got the Einstein Award. I can quote him, okay? Nothing happens until something moves. Nothing happens until something moves. Everything is movement. Every thought that you have has an energy component to it. Every thought. And if it's a thought that calibrates below 200, anger, hatred, fear, shame, the lowest, completely lowest. So if you are using shame to try to get your kids to do something and to change them, you know, all you're doing is weakening them and guaranteeing that they won't grow. So you want to be able to offer up. And here's the best advice I can give to you on it. What I desire is on its way. Not that it probably won't get here, it never has before. That's all called resistance. Right? You want to be in a state of total and complete allowing. You just allow. I just know that this is coming. It's on its way. Why? Because it's consistent with God consciousness. It's not like I'm asking to hurt somebody else or to take something from somebody or to do harm or to do it shameful or anything like that. I'm just asking. And it's like, I mean, it's right out of the Bible. Ask and it is given is a biblical quote. Ask and it is given means stay in consistent harmony with what it is that you would like to ask with God consciousness, with the highest vibration of the universe, and then offer up only thoughts that measure up to that. So you never have a thought that says, I probably won't get rich. I probably will miss my plane. Things probably won't work out. I've never been lucky before. It's just not our history. And if you watch television and if you listen to the radio and if you read the newspapers, you're going to be bombarded with all of the reasons why something can't work and why it can't happen and why we can't get those people out of there and why this won't work. And then we put out a collective energy of all of these people that are suffering and all of that. And where is the collective energy of someone who says, of course we can get them out. We're on our way. We're going to get them out as quickly as we can. And the ones that didn't get out signed up for that. And it's okay because death isn't a punishment. This is what they came here to teach us, how to be more compassionate, how to be kinder, how to be a better person. Why is it that we always become better people in the face of disasters? These are things that people have, you know, it's like if it's an infinite universe, death isn't anything to be afraid of. It's not sitting around saying, how could God do this to us? You don't do that. You go into everything that goes on in your life becomes from a perspective of, I am matching up to, it's on its way, there's nothing for me to fuss about. I desire it. It doesn't exist yet, I desire it. It's on its way. There's nothing for me to fuss about. So now what do? Now you get yourself into a position where you're looking for things to work out. Now who do you want in charge? Do you want somebody who's looking for things not to work out, who's all upset because they're not working out? Or do you want someone who says, of course it's going to work out. We're going to mobilize everything that we possibly can to make it work out. Not just politically, but in our own lives as well. Because you cannot feel bad enough to make anybody else's life better. It just will never happen. But if you feel good enough, you connect to God, because good and God are the same. By doing that, you can create the kind of world that we want. If all of us feel good, we're feeling God. If we feel God, we start acting like God. If we start acting like God, we're doing God's will. If we do God's will, then we are joining with God, and those around us will do the same. If we feel bad, you can't get depressed enough to undepress anybody. If that worked, I'd be giving a seminar on getting depressed. You can't get angry enough to make another person happy. You can't get sad enough to make somebody else feel joyful. You can only make those things happen by deciding to feel good, meaning God. Good and God, the same. Just zero, that's the difference between good and God. Just that. One little zero. There's no difference. And when my daughter, who's here with me today, who's been singing with me for the last 6 or 7 years on all of the CDs, or all of the programs that we've been doing, I gave her the very exact same lesson as I've given to all of my children. What I want you to do is put your attention on what it is that you came here to do. And what she came here to do was to sing and to bring joy into people's lives. And so she put out a CD that we did a while back called This Sky Has No Limits, which has other people's songs on it, and it's the Prayer of St. Francis and so on. And who would like a copy of this? Would you? Nice. Hey, look at there. She got it. Nice going. I'll get one for you after, okay? This Sky Has No Limits. But then I said to Sky, you know, you're singing other people's music. What do you feel? Where's your music? And she said, what do you mean? I said, you have something to tell people with your music. I said, when we do the new PBS show, I want you to write all of the songs. I want you to headline the show. I want you to sing it from your heart like you've never sung it before. I said, and get busy. You've got about 2 months to write these songs. And she would put it together, did everything, created it herself, wrote a song that she dedicated to her mom and I called You Inspire Me. And this is the CD, and this has just come out, just like last week. And Skyzy, come on up here, honey, and I know you've been waiting. Oh, you have your own. You Inspire Me. Tell them about it.
Good afternoon, everyone. This song, my dad actually called me and said in the middle of the night, I guess I'm guessing between 3 and 4, he thought of a title called You Inspire Me and said, write it. And the song came really easily. I think I wrote it in like 2 days, not even. And I love it, so I hope you guys love it too. Do you ever stop and think about your life and what it all means? Our lives are so full of miracles. I hope every person sees you have something inside that brings joy to your soul and makes your heart sing. We all share the same big blue sky and the power to do anything. You inspire me to be everything that I desire, and everything I do is to be in touch with you. In every day of my life, I dream a little higher, and it all comes back to you and how you make me so inspired. Sometimes I feel that it's right in front of me, and I have to reach out. Strength comes from knowing that you need someone to help you out. You inspire me to be everything that I desire, and everything I do is to be in touch with you. In every day of my life, I dream a little higher, and it all comes back to you and how you make me so inspired. We all have a choice to feel the love deep within us, the freedom to hear our own voice, and the chance to make our path in life a little clearer. Oh, you inspire me to be everything that I desire, and everything I do is to be in touch with you. In every day of my life, I dream a little higher, and it all comes back to you and how you make me so inspired. Do you ever stop and think about your life and find that you have everything? Thank you.
That's the theme for the next show. Where's the lady that didn't get the CD? Where are you? Now, see if you can catch it this time, okay? There you are. You inspire me. And we have these available, and I urge you to get them because I had to plunk out a lot of money and I need to be repaid. No, she did it all herself. She did it all herself. She hired the people. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece of work, and that touches me so deeply. I want to now ask you to just compose yourselves, because I want to tell you a story, and it's a story about something that inspires me. When you're inspired, some great purpose, some extraordinary project, your thoughts break their bonds, you see what it is you'd like to create, and you create it. Not only do you think, your thoughts break their bonds, but your mind transcends limitations. Transcending limitations means to understand the greatness that you are. You are a piece of God. You must be what you came from. You didn't come from your parents. You didn't come from a particle. When you look at quantum physics and study the particle that you came from, ultimately you take it all the way down to its tiniest subatomic particle, and you find out that we all came from an energy that has no form. If you were to take an apple pie, and take one slice out of that apple pie and look at that piece of pie and say, what do you think it's like? You'd probably guess that it's pretty much like what it came from. You wouldn't expect it to be pineapple, you wouldn't expect it to be cherry, you would expect it would be pretty much just like what it came from. If you had an orange and you took one slice of the orange and said, what's this slice like? You'd say, well, the best way I can tell you is it's just like what it came from. Wouldn't you? So why do we have something different for ourselves? You came from God. You came from a source. Everything comes from a source. It doesn't matter if you're a Muslim or a Catholic or a Jew or an atheist. You know that we came from a source. And you must be like what you came from. And what you came from is a place of love, and a place that excludes no one, and a place of kindness, and a place of beauty. By transcending limitations, you move into a new way of making the world change. You heard me quote Joel Goldsmith. The laws of the material world do not apply in the presence of the God realized. In 1994, early in April, in a little country the size of Maryland, in Africa, called Rwanda, a Holocaust began for the next 91 days that makes 9/11 look like a parking lot brawl and makes what happened in New Orleans seem almost insignificant. The president of Rwanda, a Hutu, was in a plane crash. And he was killed. Within 24 hours, machetes had been issued to every person over the age of 14 in the country of Rwanda. 10 million people lived there. 1 million of those people were Tutsis. 900,000 of them were Hutus. And blame was placed on the Tutsis for this, even though all of it had been prearranged. The machetes were in crates and unpacked. And the country shut down, folks, for 91 days. And all the banks closed and the schools closed. And the stores closed and the commerce stopped. In a country the size of Maryland. And 930,000 people were systematically executed on all of the streets of this country. And President Clinton, who just returned from Rwanda, said that it was the biggest failure of his administration and of the world when we stood by. When the killing started, the United States was obsessed, the day it started, with the O.J. Simpson fiasco that was taking place out in California. Remember when they were following the white Bronco? That's when the killing started, and so it didn't even make our newspapers. 91 days later, July 7th, when the French finally came through, every dog in Rwanda had to be executed because they had been doing nothing but eating human flesh on all of the streets of this country, of this beautiful country. In the midst of this Holocaust, a few Tutsis survived. Virtually all of them that survived were the ones who managed to get to the southern border to the Congo. And they were just a handful, less than 1%. And then a few also survived. In one woman was in college, in about 200 miles from her home in Rwanda, studying French. Spoke no English. Her native language is Kinyarwanda, and then French. And she came home for Easter vacation. Her parents insisted that she come home, and she didn't want to come home because it was too far to travel, and she didn't have the money, and it was a very expensive proposition. But parents persuaded her to come home, and she came home. And when she got home for Easter vacation, that's the day the killings started. And if you were a Tutsi and you were married to a Hutu, your Hutu husband had to kill you or be killed himself and all of the children as well, including the grandparents. This is the way it went. And everybody had a card. You were either a Hutu or a Tutsi. There was a woman there, and the father persuaded a relative, a friend, a pastor, to hide her in a bathroom with seven other women. And these seven women were in a home, a two-bedroom bungalow home in Rwanda. They didn't speak for 91 days, not one word. And the house was searched on 9 separate occasions. She had no idea what would happen to her mother and her father and her 3 brothers. When she went into the bathroom, for some reason, she thought in the ways that I've been speaking about for the past hour and a half, and she decided, even though she was being searched to be killed in a two-bedroom bungalow home, 200 to 400 people searching the home with machetes. She was hidden in a bathroom that had a valet in front of it, and she was never found. And she could see the machete. She was this far. This was a 3-foot by 3-foot bathroom, about the size of that table. She weighed 65 pounds when she came out, because she only had got a few scraps now and then. She's 5'9". And she managed somehow, in that time, to teach herself the English language. Somehow she knew that learning English was what she had to do. She had a French dictionary and an English dictionary and wasn't allowed to speak, not once, in 91 days. She managed to put a barrier. I don't know how. All I know is that she lives at this level of consciousness, this saintly level of consciousness, this city consciousness level. And, well, without telling you any more, let me read the introduction to her book that I'm writing the introduction to. I heard the killers call my name. They were on the other side of the wall, less than an inch of plaster and wood separated us. Their voices were cold, hard, and determined. "She's here. We know she's here. She's here somewhere. Find her. Find Immaculee," they were saying. There were many voices and many killers. I could see them in my mind. My former friends and neighbors, who had always greeted me with love and kindness, now moved through the house calling my name while carrying spears and machetes. "I've killed 399 cockroaches," said one of the killers. "Immaculee will make 400. It's a good number to kill." I cowered in the corner of our tiny secret bathroom without moving a muscle. Like the seven other women hiding for their lives with me, I held my breath so the killers wouldn't hear me breathing. Their voices clawed at my flesh. I felt like I was lying on a bed of burning coals, like I'd been set on fire. A sweeping wind of pain engulfed my body. 1,000 invisible needles were ripping into me. I never dreamed fear could cause such agonizing physical pain. I tried to swallow, but my throat closed up. I had no saliva. My mouth was drier than sand. I closed my eyes and tried to make myself disappear, but their voices just grew louder. I knew they would have no mercy. My mind echoed with only one thought: if they catch me, they will kill me. If they catch me, they will kill me. They were just outside the door. At any second, they would find me. I wondered what it was going to feel like when the machete slashed through my skin and cut deep into my bones. I thought of my brothers and my dear parents, wondering if they were dead or alive, and if we would soon be together in heaven. I put my hands together, I clasped my father's rosary, and I began to pray. "Please, God, please, please, God, don't let me die like this. Do not let these killers find me. You tell us in the Bible that if we ask, we'll receive. Well, God, I'm asking, please, make these killers go away. Please don't let me die in this bathroom. Please, God, please save me." The killers moved from the house, and we all began to breathe again. They were gone. But they would be back many times over the next 3 months. I believe God had spared my life, but I would learn over the next 91 days. As I hid trembling in fear with seven women in a 3-foot by 3-foot bathroom, that being spared is much different than being saved. But I did learn it. And it was a lesson that was forever changed me. A lesson that in the midst of mass murder taught me how to love those who hated and hunted me, and how to forgive those who slaughtered my family. My name? My name is Immaculee Ilibagiza, and this is the story of how I discovered God during one of history's bloodiest genocides. Ladies and gentlemen, Immaculee Ilibagiza.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, everybody, and good afternoon. Thank you, Dr. Wen. And despite the sad story, I'm really happy to be here, and thank you for having us here. I always tell Wayne that maybe if he was in my country, before 1994, this genocide would not have happened because his teachings are just doing what it is to avoid anything like genocide. My story is a very sad story, but I am so grateful now that I have lived it because it has changed me for the best. It was back in 1994, like he said, I went back home for a holiday. I'm so happy my father actually insisted that I come because everybody I left behind was killed, 900 students in my college. And when I get home, it was like 3 days later when my brother came to me in the morning and told me that the plane of the president was shot down and he died. Before there were wars against Tutsi to kill Tutsis, so we knew that there would be maybe some people who would die, but we didn't think that they would kill everybody in their families. So the new government gave an order that no one move from the house, and we just stayed there. 3 days later, the radio outside the country, the BBC, CNN, they were talking that there are many people, Tutsis, who are dying in the country. And this time, they are killing them with their families, with the children, the mother, the father. And they don't know how it is going to be. So my parents insisted, I was one daughter with two brothers home. They insisted that I go to hide to a Hutu friend who was a neighbor. I went. I just obeyed, really. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave them behind. But they thought that if I stay, maybe I might get raped. I might not be able to run if anything happened. So I went to the pastor, and he put me to sit in his bathroom, in his bedroom, with all the seven women. A small bathroom, like when he said, like this table. He told us not to say a word, because he won't even tell his children. So we were happy. The first week, he would bring food, like in night when it is late. Most of the time, the leftover of the children, he had 10 children. So whatever he could, he would bring, and we were very grateful. But there was something like, we are complaining, how can we be in this bathroom for a week? We thought it was the worst that can happen. We heard on radio that they are killing many Tutsis in the stadiums. They are destroying churches where people went to hide. And now that they are going to start search houses. I remember when they came first time, I was stretching, because we never slept really. And I saw these people outside with so all kind of arms, spears, they had guns, machetes, everyone had one. And they were just dressed in many funny ways. And they came inside the house. To me, it was like thousands, but after we heard that it was 300 to 400. I cannot even tell you enough how much fear you can feel when you know somebody who is looking for you is right next door, next 5 inches away. They did search everywhere, in every room, in the other bathroom. They searched in the roof. I don't think I felt much of what was going on outside. I remember the first minutes when they were there. All I knew is that I couldn't hold on to something. And I just wanted to have some hope. And I started to pray. I called God on God. I called on him, and almost my voice was not getting there. I felt before that God was away, so much far away, that you have to really to pray hard for him to listen to you, to come to you. I begged him. I started to imagine myself holding his legs and telling him, I'm not letting you go if these people don't, before they leave the house. I begged and I held hard. I remember I had the Bible. I put it in my mouth. I'm like, God, I just want to be one with you. I'm begging you, you don't leave me. You don't let these people kill me. And there were voices, of course, telling me, look, there's no way you can be saved. Maybe God doesn't even exist. Why are you calling on him? And if other people are dying, why you? What special are you? But yet, I was saying, in another voice was telling me, well, he has said in the Bible that ask and shall be given. And then I said, God, I'm asking you. I am asking you as you said. You did not put any condition. And here I'm asking you, I'm begging you, please save me. Do not let them come. And I felt that I'm not ready to die. I said, if I'm ready to die, I'm sure you can send a sign. But this time, I just don't want to die. Luckily, they left the home. But the next day, the pastor told us that they will be coming back anytime. And that was the changing time of my life. They came, before they came, the waiting time to wait for those to come to search, knowing that we can find you this time, was so painful. And it was so many voices. And I was angry with the people who were killing me. I had this hate in me that I was so scared of, this tumor in my heart that is almost changing me in a monster. But yet, I felt that I had a good reason, but it didn't feel good. So I was tired, it was exhausting, I was sweating sometimes. And I said, maybe to shut off these voices, suggesting to me what I should do to the killers, and maybe how they were also telling me how I'm going to die so badly. Maybe I should start to pray. And if I pray every minute, they will not find a way to tell me, to suggest to me. I started to pray. I mean, from 6 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night, all the time, concentrated on God. But I felt that being angry with the killers, it was okay. We agreed with God that this is a good reason, there is no way I can love them. But yet, as I pray, there is almost like this dark region in my heart. As I say, our Lord is prayer. Somewhere we say that, forgive us our trespasses. As we forgive them, I had to repeat it almost every 10 minutes because I'm praying all day. It was almost like it's not really reaching anywhere. And I said, there's no way you can ask me to forgive them. It is out of question. But yet, who I was praying to almost didn't match with my anger inside and with my prayers. So I asked God, I said, look, if this is how it is and I'm still miserable in my heart, even if I'm praying to you, I'm begging you to help me out. I just want to let it happen. I want it to take over everything from me and just direct my life. If you have heard some of Wayne's CDs, there's a time he described so well about plugging into God. That was the moment I felt that I'm just going to plug into you and you direct me wherever you want me to go because I don't have any reason how, any reasoning behind, any logic how I can forgive this, I can live and I can do this. So I said, okay, take over, everything is yours. Almost really physically relaxed. I felt so good. And then slowly I started to hear, almost like, I don't know if it's a vision, but like a realization, like voices in my mind telling me that you have to forgive them. You are angry, but God is sad. These are his children who are coming to kill. They have embraced the evil. You cannot hate them. You're not doing good to me. Now we have to try to pray for them. That made sense. I said, okay, I can pray for them, but forgiving, even that, it became like something now I had to do for myself. It was like a helping hand. If you forgive them, let go that anger, then you become much cleaner, much more peaceful. And forgive them, I didn't have to do any big work, any big job that I, like I thought before. So one time I tell God, look, okay, I forgive them. I really looked at them very clear. It wasn't something I was forcing. Very clear that this is people who are doing evil as people, but they are capable of doing what is good. I remember visualizing the cross and Jesus on the cross when he was saying that, Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing. It was so clear to me that they do not know. There's no way somebody can cause another such pain and keep doing it like fun. And I was so much liberated. I was so much lighter. I was so happy. And then I started to see the God of love of God. I started to see him, to talk to him. I remember I had a dream, Jesus telling me that when I come outside the bathroom, none of my family will be alive. But he will take care of me if I keep praying and I keep my heart full of love. I said, okay, that's nice. I mean, to be cared about by Jesus, there's nothing best. But I was in a dream. When I woke up, I said, how can I accept this? No way, there's no way I can accept my mom to die or my dad, and there's no reason, there's not for any price. But later, 3 months later actually, we spent in that bathroom 3 months. And when I came out, I realized that everyone in my family has died. I was the only survivor. The house was destroyed. All the houses my dad had been burned out. Every clothes I had before was done dead. My grandmother, my grandfather, my uncles. It was almost like a beginning for the world to me. When I went outside and I saw dead bodies all over, it was just unbelievable. But yet, I had to go back to what I have seen in God's eyes. I knew he was powerful. I knew he can do anything. I have learned about that trust as little as a seed of mustard. And that is all I wanted, to move mountains. I remember, without having a second clothes, asking God, I just want to know how next day will be. I'm curious to know how next day can be. And every day of my life, without having an idea where it can come from, there came people, somebody who knew my mom, passing by. I was so far in a bush, not even really a good road. I didn't expect many people to pass by. And one of them offered me a shelter to stay by her. After time, I started to look for a job in the UN, in a place where they require English. And my English I learned in the bathroom was so small, but yet God made it possible that I got the job. And nothing is possible for me today. I really don't worry, because only for one reason, I know God is there and he's so real. He is so real more than before. I try to encourage my friends to do two things, to love and to forgive, to let go the anger. That is what hinders us to get any joy in our life. And to be in touch with God, it is something you practice every day. You have to pray in the morning, in the day. You have to be one with God all the time. God I discovered was a God that lives in me, that we talk as friends. And I'm so happy I have discovered him. And I really feel that at the end, we won't be judged by our sins, but by how much we have loved. I am trying to help the orphans in my country wherever I can. I'm trying to make a foundation. I'm so glad I have Wen. He makes everything possible. And I just want to contribute to the world. And I know I have God as a parent. I really don't feel like an orphan. And I just tell everyone, keep the love and the forgiveness, keep cleaning the heart, and everything will be okay. Thank you so much.
Immaculate Ilibagiza. Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you, Immaculate. She didn't go into some of the details about what happened to her family, but her mom and dad both were macheted to death. Her brother had a master's degree, and they put him in a stadium and cut open his brain so they could show the people what the brain of a master's degree person would look like. And it was, the horrors are almost unimaginable. If you saw Hotel Rwanda, it just gives it sort of a little flavor of the kind of hatred that can take place when we these kinds of things happen. And Immaculate and I, Immaculate came to a talk that I gave in New York, 6 months ago maybe? And now, earlier you heard me talking about your mind transcends limitations. Try to get a picture of this. It's 1994, she's 24 years old. She's a college student. She goes into a bathroom to learn English. Why does she learn English in a bathroom when she's being hunted to be killed? Because 6 years later, she's going to be so compelled to awaken every morning in the middle of the night and to write out every single detail of it. She's going to be married to someone and be in America on an asylum visa and have two children. She is going to be giving lectures around the world in English to English audiences like yourselves today. This is 11 years before any of this were to transpire. What I'm saying is that what Einstein spoke about, there's no time. There's an awareness of what it is that you have to do, so that just the learning of the language and the practicing of it and the sitting down, and she wrote 140 to 150,000 words by hand of this story, but had nowhere to go with it, didn't know what to do with it, and truly it wasn't publishable because it's her third language. If you would like to try writing your story in Kinyarwanda, perhaps you would have an understanding of what I'm speaking about. But nevertheless, the essence of it was there. And when she came to a talk that I had given, the minute that I saw her and spoke to her, I knew that her story had to be told. So we've created, here's her book, it'll be out in March. If you want to order it today, she will autograph it. I will pay the shipping to have it shipped to you. It'll be out in March. It's called Left to Tell, Discovering God Amidst the Rwandan Holocaust. And you can order it from the back, and I'll make sure that you get it, and she'll autograph it for you. She will be lecturing all over the world with me for the next 2 years. These purple bands, yes, telling her story. This purple band that I'm wearing and that Immaculate is wearing says, Left to Tell, Find Inspiration. And for a $5 contribution, every bit of it will be taken personally by myself and Immaculate to Rwanda this in December. And we're going to create a several million-dollar fund to go over there and do the kinds of things. As much as we need help here, it's needed everywhere because we're all one. So if you'd like to have one of these and wear it and tell other people about it, we would be very honored to take those funds, and it's going to be the Immaculate Ilibagiza Fund Foundation for these little orphan children who were all a part of this horrible Holocaust. So when I said I was going to give a talk about inspiration, I can talk about it all day, and I can write about it really well. I'm getting pretty good at that. But she is my inspiration. The fact that she would go in there and find in her heart a way to be at God consciousness, knowing that people were going to be cutting you to pieces. And there were no one was spared in Rwanda in those 91 days. No one who was Tutsi, okay? I just want to share one other thing with you. I have one other book that I always bring with me. It's called The Experience of God, and what she was speaking about is the experience, because she experienced it. The contributors include myself, Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Mother Teresa, the Dalai Lama, Louise Hay, Ram Dass, Bernie Siegel, Scott Peck, Joan Borzenko. I call it a bathroom book, if you're looking for it. Because I believe that when you replace lower energy with higher energy, you attract the higher energy into your life. Stand up. Can you catch it?
Absolutely.
All right. There you go. Nice guys. The experience of God. And I also, Tracy, is that you walking out? I just want to introduce my oldest daughter, who was born during the Detroit riots in 1967. Tracy Dyer. That's my oldest daughter. She's here with you. When we come back, I'm going to go through the other four components. We're going to take about a 20, 25-minute break, and we'll be finishing about 4:15, and it's even going to get better, so don't go away. Thanks. God bless you. I'll see you at 3:30 right here on this stage. Thanks, Immaculee. And she'll be autographing for you as well, and if you'd like to order her book or get a purple band, please do so. Thank you.